Hi, everybody. Pastor Tim here. Welcome to the Bereans Bible Institute. We're in module number 11, going through the book of Revelation. This is lesson number 14. Now, over the last few weeks, we've gone through the seven letters to the seven assemblies. And now we're going to be beginning what we would call the prophetic portion of the book of Revelation. You may remember that Revelation is divided into three sections, which we saw in Revelation chapter 1, verse 19, where Jesus says to John, write the things which you have seen, past tense, referring to the vision that he just saw of Christ walking among the seven lampstands, which are the seven assemblies. And then he says, and the things which are the letters that Jesus dictated to those seven assemblies. And then he says the things that you will see after these things. And so that refers to the prophetic portion of the book, which begins in chapter 4. If you look at chapter 4, verse 1, it says, after these things I observed, and look, a door having been opened in the sky, and the first voice I heard was like a trumpet speaking with me, saying, come up here, and I will show you what is required to take place after these things. And that's the same clause that we saw back there in Revelation 1:19, that is the things which are hereafter or after these things. And so chapter 4 begins the prophetic portion of the book. But chapter 4 really requires an introduction all of its own, which I'm going to do today. I'm not really going to get very far into chapter 4 today because I want to lay down for you some foundational material that you need to have so that you understand what's going on. But before we do that, I want to just briefly summarize what we've talked about in the last seven lessons, which is the Jesus dictating the seven letters to the seven assemblies. You know, a lot of people, when they hear teaching through the book of Revelation, they just want to get to the eschatology, right? I just want to get to the end time stuff because that's the glitzy stuff. That's the stuff that people want to know about, what's going to happen in the end times. But really, chapters 2 and 3, the seven letters, are more important. They are what I would say are the most important portion of the book. And the reason why, if you look at my translation, the Last Generation Version, you'll see that all of chapters 2 and 3 are in red letters because they are all the words of Christ. And that is why this is so important. It is Christ's own words. You know, we have chapter 1 is John recording the vision of Jesus, in his glory, walking among the seven assemblies. And the rest of the book is all about, John being shown what is going to take place, but he's being shown usually by an angel or something like that, you know, explaining to him what's going on as he's seeing these visions unfolding. But chapters 2 and 3 are the words of Christ. And that's why they're the most important, because as I said before, the seven letters are not in sandwiched there in the book of Revelation as filler material. They're not there just to shuffle aside as we get into the stuff that we're more interested in. They are there so that we know and so that we can be equipped to endure what is to come in the end times. And the messages of the seven letters are all about the assemblies, the type of assemblies that are going to be successful in the end times and the type of assemblies that are not going to be successful in the end times. And we saw that Jesus threatened many of these seven assemblies, and he gave a promise to every one of the seven assemblies as well. So we should heed his instructions. We should heed Jesus' warnings. And we should look at those seven assemblies as examples of what kind of assemblies we want to have. And it's up to us as Christians to make sure that the assembly that we belong to is going to be one of those assemblies that are going to make it successfully through the end times. Because remember, several of them were threatened severely, right? Ephesus was threatened that their lampstand would be removed. You know, there was others that were threatened with severe destruction even of certain members of that assembly. You know, the church in, or the assembly in Philadelphia was the one that was promised to be preserved by God through the end times. And it is that kind of assembly that we want to be part of. And if you remember what the qualities were of that assembly, it was that they had heeded the teachings of Christ. They had heeded his word. They had guarded his word. It's a pretty strong word where it says, because you have kept or guarded. That's literally what the Greek word means. The word of my perseverance or endurance, I also will keep or guard you through and out of the hour of trial that is about to come upon the whole world. So if you want to claim the promises of Christ guarding us in the end times and providing for us in the end times, as the letter to Philadelphia indicates, and also as we get into chapter 12 when we see the woman who flees into the wilderness, that chapter describes how that guarding is going to take place by those few who are like the assembly at Philadelphia, who have kept Christ's commandments. We need to make sure that our assembly, whatever it is, wherever we belong, that our assembly is like the assembly in Philadelphia. And the assembly in Philadelphia, as I said, was paid careful attention to the teachings and the commandments of Christ and conforming their lives as individuals, but also collectively as that assembly, conforming their lives to the teachings of Christ, as we have in the Sermon on the Mount in particular. All right, and I've referred back to the Sermon on the Mount quite a few times, and I cannot overemphasize the importance of that sermon. Matthew 5 through 7 is critically important. If you want to make it through the end time successfully, you need to saturate your mind with the teachings or the commandments of Christ. There's 10 commandments of Christ. He gave a new law, the new covenant, in Matthew 5 through 7. And if you want to make it successfully through the end times, you need to saturate your mind with that. And also, that sermon teaches Christians how to interact with each other appropriately as part of a body, as part of an assembly. And anyway, I want to stress that point before we move on into the rest of the prophetic part of Revelation, because this is critically important. See, there's no point in knowing what's going to happen in the end times and how events are going to open up and be fulfilled unless we know how to be prepared ourselves personally for what is coming. And so, again, I stress the importance of the assembly to which you belong, and if you don't belong to an assembly that is faithful, that is like that assembly in Philadelphia, then you need to remove yourself from wherever you're going, and you need to find one. And if you can't find one, you need to start one. All right? You can start an assembly with two people. All right? But anyway, that's just a little encouragement there. All right? Now, chapter 4 begins, actually, beginning in chapter 4 all the way to chapter 19, actually chapter 20 in Revelation, which is the major prophetic portion of the book prior to that last couple of chapters that talk about the kingdom. But the chapters that talk about the time of tribulation and so forth, chapters 4 through 19, are really an expansion of a passage of scripture that we find in the book of Daniel. Now, if you have not gone through our series on Daniel, I would strongly encourage you to do that as preparatory for this, what we're going to be getting into now, beginning in chapter 4. All right, so I'll just encourage you to do that. But in chapter 7 of the book of Daniel, Daniel was given a vision, which was actually an expansion of the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had. Now, you may remember back in Daniel 2, Nebuchadnezzar had this dream. Daniel interpreted it, but it was a dream about an image, a great image. And the interpretation was that Nebuchadnezzar was the head of gold, which was the Babylonian kingdom, and then the chest and arms were the of silver, represented the following kingdom, which was the Persian Empire. The belly of bronze and waist was a vision about the Greek Empire that was to follow, and then also it was to be broken up into four. But then following that, the legs of iron was a prophecy of the Roman Empire that was to follow. And then coming out of the legs of iron were the feet that were of iron and clay with 10 toes, right? And then the interpretation of that vision was that Christ was going to establish his kingdom in the time of those final kings that were represented by the 10 toes in that image. Well, later in Daniel's life, he was given a vision that expanded on that. And so I want to read that. Let's go to Daniel chapter 7. And at the end of this chapter, Daniel's given a little a glimpse into a heavenly, or what I would call the celestial court, where God then judges the nations, and the Son of Man is given the kingdom at the end of this chapter. And that little section there is what the rest of the book of Revelation is about. It's an expanding on this little section of Daniel 7. So I want you to see this in Daniel 7. So go to verse 1 of Daniel 7. It says, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Daniel spoke, saying, quote, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea." That's the Mediterranean Sea. "And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it." Now, this is in this vision, this is the section that's talking about Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian kingdom. And we know what it's talking about there was when Nebuchadnezzar was driven mad because he would not humble himself before God. He acted like he was insane and acted like a wild animal for 7 years until then God gave him his sanity back and he was restored to his kingdom. And that's what that is referring to there. Then the next verse says, "And suddenly another beast, a second like a bear, it raised up on one side and had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh." Now this is prophetic of the Persian Empire that followed. It's actually the Medo-Persian Empire because it consisted of the Persian Empire and the Empire of the Medes that merged together. The Persian was stronger, which was why it was raised up on one side. But anyway, this empire under Cyrus the Great conquered the Babylonian Empire, right? Well, then verse 6, it says, "After this I looked, and there was another like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird, and the beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it." Now this beast, the leopard, is a representation of the Greek Empire of Alexander the Great. The reason that it has 4 wings and 4 heads is because Alexander's kingdom, as we'll see if you read Daniel chapter 8, Alexander's kingdom, when Alexander died, his kingdom was broken up into 4, and it was given to his 4 generals. And from there, chapter 8 traces a lot more details, which are not given here, right? But anyway, in verse 7 now, he skips down to the Roman Empire, all right? And this is the dreadful beast. Let's begin reading in verse 7. He says, "After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth, and it was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns." Now this is important that it had 10 horns, because you may remember back in Nebuchadnezzar's dream back in chapter 2, that his image had 10 toes that were part of that last kingdom. And so these 10 toes and these 10 kings are one and the same. Verse 8, I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. I watched till thrones were put in place. Now this, beginning in verse 9 here, where he says, I watched till thrones were put in place, this is what Revelation chapter 4 is about. As we get into chapter 4, Revelation, you'll see that John is caught up in a vision. He is caught up to see into heaven. And what does he see immediately is he sees God's throne and he sees other thrones surrounding God's throne. That is 24 elders. And this is exactly what Daniel is seeing in his vision as well. All right. I watched till the thrones were put in place and the Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame and its wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. A thousand thousands ministered to him. And we're going to see this same kind of language in chapter 4 and 5 of Revelation, where it talks about these angelic thousands and thousands and myriads of angels that are before the throne and praising God. This is what we're seeing here. All right. It says, 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. Now notice this, the court was seated. And that's what we have again in Revelation 4 and 5. It's the court. The court that is going to decide the fate of humanity. The fate of the kingdoms of the world. And the books were opened. Now, this is going on. Daniel is seeing this in the sky. But he's also seeing what's going on earth at the same time. And one of the things I want you to notice is that the court is seated prior to the Antichrist, who's the little horn, carrying out his activities. You may notice that back in verse, when he's talking about the fourth beast, back in verse 7, it says, he talks about it having 10 horns, right? But then he says in verse 8, I was considering the horns, plural, the 10 horns. And there was another horn, a little one, coming up, before whom three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Okay, so look at the order of events. This is really important, the order of events. First, he identifies the fourth beast, which was the Roman Empire. And then he notices the 10 horns. The 10 horns on the fourth beast are 10 kings that all reign simultaneously at the end of the age. They come forth from the fourth beast, that is from the Roman Empire, but they all are reigning simultaneously. Now, how do we know that they're reigning simultaneously at the end of the age? Well, we know this from a few things. First of all, go back to chapter 2 of Daniel. In Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the 10 toes, remember that? If you go towards the end of the chapter there, it says, verse 41, he says, whereas you saw the feet and the toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet, notice this, the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay, so the kingdom will be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of these kings, now which kings? A lot of people misinterpret this. They think he's talking about all of these, you know, Nebuchadnezzar and all the, you know, the entire image. But that's not what he's referring to. These kings refers to the 10 toes. All right. In the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms and stand forever. So in the days of these kings, that is the 10 toes, God is going to set up the kingdom of Christ on the earth. So all 10 kings, the 10 toes, have to be reigning simultaneously when Christ returns, because it's in the days of these 10 kings. Okay? Also, we have, if you go over to Revelation chapter 17, go there with me for just a moment. If you have my translation, you can use that, or I'm just gonna flip over into in the New King James Version here quick. It'll be easier for me to find. Revelation chapter 17. Look what it says in verse. And the 10 horns, verse 16, the 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. For God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind, to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. Now, what we have then is the 10 kings, which are 10 horns on this beast in the end times, which are also the 10 horns on the beast that we saw in Daniel chapter 7, that these 10 are going to be reigning simultaneously. They're going to give their authority and their power to this one king, which is the little horn that came up among the 10 in Daniel's vision. And then they're going to continue to reign along with the beast, but under his authority for the remainder until Christ returns. All right, so we have that scenario going on. Now go back to Daniel chapter 7. So I want you to get the sequence down here, all right? Daniel chapter 7, verse 8. He says, I was considering the horns. There are 10 horns that are already existing now in the end times. Another little horn comes up. So the 10 have to be in place before the little horn, which is the Antichrist, comes up among them. And then he says, he had a mouth speaking great and pompous words. And then it says, I watched, verse 9, I watched till thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated, and his garment was white as snow. Now notice the Ancient of Days took his seat. It says he was seated. It doesn't say he has been seated all the, you know, from the beginning of time. It's saying he's taking his place on his throne as the judge. All right, that's what's going on here, and that's what we see in Revelation chapter 4, that John is caught up to see that. That is God seated on his throne as judge, about to pronounce judgment upon the earth and to deliver the kingdom over to his son. So, first, we have the 10 kings. It's important that you understand the scenario. First, the 10 kings are going to come to power. Then, the little horn is going to come up. Then the thrones are going to be put in place, and the Ancient of Days is going to take his seat. All right. Now, what this tells us, it tells us something about the chronology of the book of Revelation, because chapter 4, when we have John being caught up to see the God seated on his throne and the other thrones surrounding his throne and all these things happening in chapter 4, and then also in chapter 5, then begins to tell us about the Lamb who is slain, who then takes the scroll that's sealed with seven seals, and he begins to open the seals of the scroll, and the judgments begin to pour out. It places the sequence of those things, that is the sequence of the seven seals that we see beginning, talked about in chapter 5, and then they're opened in chapter 6. We see that this is taking place after the court is seated, and the court is seated, according to Daniel, after the 10 kings are in place, and then the little horn arises among the 10 kings. So the sequence of events that are going to take place as we go through the book of Revelation, you cannot take the events of the seven seals or the seven trumpets which are given later or the seven vials or any of those things. You cannot place those all the way back, you know, like a lot of people interpret Revelation as, you know, being fulfilled from the time of the apostles all the way down, all the way until the end of the age. That can't be so. It all has to take place. All of Revelation, beginning in chapter 4, has to take place after the 10 kings that are going to be alive at the second coming of Christ, after those 10 kings are in place, after the beast, the little horn, the Antichrist, rises up among them, and then after the heavenly court is seated, where God is going to pronounce judgment upon these kingdoms, which unfolds throughout the rest of Revelation, and then some other events take place. Let's continue reading in Daniel 9. But I want you to understand the chronology here, all right, and how the chronology of Revelation is linked to Daniel chapter 7. All right, you get that? First, the 10 horns spring from the fourth beast, which was the Roman Empire. Then among those 10, one horn rises, the Antichrist. Then the heavenly court is seated, which begins in Revelation chapter 4. All right. So he said, let's go back to Daniel 7, verse 9. I watched till the thrones were put in place. The Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated. Again, that's an event. It's not talking about it's always been seated. All right. The court was seated, and the books were opened. And one of those books is going to be the seven-sealed scroll that we see in Revelation 5. Now, I watched then, which is a time element. That is, after the court has been seated, he watches. John is watching what's going on earth with the Antichrist, this little horn, and the other 10 kings, while simultaneously the court is seated in heaven. I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain. Now, don't confuse the beast with the horn. All right? The beast is not the little horn. The beast is the fourth beast mentioned all the way back in verse 7, right? The fourth beast that was mighty and it was and so forth, that had that 10 horns came up from the fourth beast. So what we have is the little horn that's also coming up among the 10 horns that came up on the fourth beast. He is now speaking pompous words, the little horn. He says, I watched until the beast was slain. That is the little horn that came up among the 10 horns that came up on the fourth beast. He's speaking pompous words, and then the beast that they came from is slain. All right, that's the important thing to see here. The beast that the 10 horns and the little horn came up from is slain, and it says, its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. Now, that's not talking about the destruction of the Antichrist and his kingdom at the second coming. What this is talking about is what we will read about in Revelation chapters 17 and 18, which is the destruction of Mystery Babylon, which is Rome. Right? It's the destruction of Rome by the 10 kings and the Antichrist that come out of Rome, that come out of the old Roman Empire. And they then turn on Rome and destroy Rome. All right? So its body is the remnants of the old Roman Empire are then destroyed and given to the burning flame. As for the rest of the beasts, that is, what remains of the prior kingdoms, the Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire, and the Grecian Empire, as to the rest of these, it says their dominion is taken away. Now, when their dominion is taken away, it's because the 10 kings give their power and authority to the one, the beast, the little horn in Daniel, but he's called the beast in Revelation. All right, they give their power and authority to that. That's in Revelation 17. And so their dominion is taken away. That is, the Antichrist kingdom now ruled by Antichrist and the 10 kings under him who have given him their authority, then their dominion is going to include these other beasts. So what this is telling us is the extent to which the Antichrist's kingdom is going to absorb the other previous kingdoms and the territory that it's going to absorb. It's going to absorb all of the territory that was part of the Roman Empire, part of the Persian Empire, part of the Greek Empire, and the Roman, Babylonian. Babylonian, Persian, Greek, and Roman, all those empires are going to be absorbed into the Antichrist's kingdom, all right? And then it says, verse 12 again, as for the rest of these beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives are prolonged for a season and a time. Now look at verse 13. He's alternating back and forth between heaven and earth, between the heavenly court and the actions of the little horn on earth that's, you know, with all this pompous words. It says, I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man. Now again, this is after the heavenly court is seated with the Ancient of Days and the other thrones and the myriads of angels around him. Then after the actions of the little horn, who causes, because of his pompous words, he causes the beast that is the fourth beast to be slain, that is the Roman Empire, to be destroyed and turned over to the burning flame, right, in Revelation 18 and 19 there. And then the remainder of the kingdoms absorbed into the Antichrist kingdom, that's verse 12. And then after all of that has taken place, it says, I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. Of course, that's Jesus actually referenced that specifically in Matthew 24, verses 29 through 31. And it says, he came to the Ancient of Days. That is, when Daniel is looking at this heavenly court, this heavenly scene, he sees the coming of the Son of Man. Now, this is skipping all the way to Revelation 19. Where Christ then is coming on the clouds of heaven. But it says, they brought him near before him, that is the Son of Man, before the Ancient of Days. Then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which will not pass away, and his kingdom, the one which shall not be destroyed. Now, of course, this is talking about the kingdom of Christ, when he returns on that white horse in Revelation 19, and the kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of our Lord, and so forth. Verse 15, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by. Now these are the angels that are revealing these things to Daniel, and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. So now we're going to see the interpretation. These great beasts, which are four kings or kingdoms, which arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I wish to know the truth about the fourth beast. That's the one that the ten horns come from and the little horn comes from, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet. And the ten horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, before which three fell, namely, the horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than its fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High. Now notice it says that he was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. That is, this is the persecution that's going to take place in the time of tribulation, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was made in favor of the saints. That is, when the Son of Man is brought before the Ancient of Days, as we read earlier, right? And then he's given the kingdom. That's at the end of the tribulation. and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. So Daniel's, again, reiterating what he saw, then notice what the angel says. Thus he said, quote, "The fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which shall be different from the other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole land." And again, it's the whole empire. It's the whole, all that these previous empires have controlled. "Trample it and break it in pieces. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom." Now, this is a critical point, because there's a lot of end time teachers out there that are telling you that the Antichrist kingdom is going to be something apart from the Roman Empire, and that's false. Okay, it's an Islamic empire or something like that. No, it's not. It's going to come from the fourth beast, and the fourth beast is absolutely the Roman Empire. If you follow if you follow the parallels between Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the legs of iron and the fourth beast of Daniel, and also if you go into chapter 8, it's clearly the Roman Empire that is the legs of iron, that is the fourth beast, okay? And it says here that the ten kings are going to arise from this kingdom in verse 24. And then it says, "And another shall rise after them," that's the little horn, "and he shall be different from the first ones," that is the first horns, the ten kings that are reigning simultaneously. "And he shall subdue three kings," that is, this is how he's going to get the other ten, the other seven, to deliver their dominion to him. Is he's first going to conquer three of them, and then all ten of them are going to give their dominion to him. And then it says, "He shall speak pompous words against the Most High. He shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time." That is, he is going to be persecuting believers for 3.5 years. That's the latter part of the tribulation. "And the court will be seated, and they will take away his dominion and consume and destroy it forever. Then the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom," that is the kingdom of God, "is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. This is the end of the account. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts troubled me greatly, and my countenance changed, and I kept the matter in my heart." All right, now, I spent today's lesson mostly talking about Daniel chapter 7, because, as I said before, all of chapters 4 through chapter 19, actually, even chapter 20, which is the kingdom, which we just read about there, is all about how that this heavenly court is going to operate as simultaneously with the beast's actions on earth, or the Antichrist's actions on earth, and the ten kings' actions on earth, while the court in heaven is judging what is going on earth and pouring out judgments and plagues upon this final kingdom in the end times, and how that's all going to play out. All right, so you need to see that these things are parallel. And again, as I said before, this is going to help us with our chronology as we work our way through the rest of the book of Revelation. Now, what I want to do, just before I close, I've got like 5 or 6 minutes left. What I want to do is, let's just look at the first couple of verses in chapter 4, and I want to comment on that. All right, so chapter 4, verse 1, he says, "After these things I observed, and look, a door having been opened in the sky, and the first voice I heard was like a trumpet speaking with me, saying," quote, "come up here, and I will show you what is required to take place after these things. Immediately I came to be in the breath. And look, a throne was sitting, and someone was seated on the throne." Again, that's the Ancient of Days that we just read about. Now, notice that there is an open door in the sky, and John is told, he hears a voice like a trumpet. Now, the voice like a trumpet was mentioned previously in Revelation chapter 1, verse 10. Remember when John first saw the vision of Christ, he heard a voice behind him like a trumpet speaking to him. And so the fact that he says here that the voice is like a trumpet is clearly saying that the one speaking to him here is also the same one that was speaking to him in Revelation 1, which is, of course, Jesus. And that's why I have the words in red letters come up here, and I will show you what is required to take place after these things. That is, Christ himself is calling John to view from heaven. Now, did John physically leave earth? Was John caught up bodily into heaven to observe what's going on in heaven? You know, if somebody was there with John while he's on the island of Patmos and he's seeing these visions, did John suddenly disappear? Or did they see John ascend up into heaven? No, because we know that no man has ascended into heaven except the one who came down from heaven, that is the Son of Man who is in heaven. Those words were written by John himself in the Gospel of John chapter 3 and verse 13. No one can ascend into heaven. So was John having an out-of-body experience? Did his immortal ghost leave his body and float up into heaven, and John's body just kind of fall down unconscious on the ground while his ghost ascended to heaven? No, there's no such thing as out-of-body experiences, because we do not have an immortal ghost. All right, we are living flesh. So what does it mean when it says, "I came to be in the breath"? That's the key phrase here. What does it mean when it says, "I came to be in the breath"? Well, if you go back to Revelation chapter 1, verse 10, it says, John, when he saw the first vision, he was still on earth, and it said, "I was in the breath on the chief day, and I saw," and he heard behind me this voice like a trumpet. So we see that the voice like a trumpet and the vision that John saw in chapter 1 says he was in the breath in order to see the vision, but the vision was here on earth. So John didn't leave his body when it says he was in the breath in chapter 1 and he heard the voice like a trumpet talking with him. He simply was able to see a vision, right? He was able to see things that he couldn't normally see, because he is in the breath of God, or in the Spirit of God. And again, we've talked about this breath business in the seven letters, because we saw that in every one of the seven letters, at the end of that letter, Jesus, after giving these instructions to the seven assemblies, he says to all of them, the one having an ear, listen to what the breath is saying to the assembly. So it was in the breath, John being in the breath, that allowed him to commune with Christ personally, to see the visions, to have Jesus dictate these letters directly to him. And John heard Jesus dictating these seven letters to him. So he was in communication with Christ. Did Christ leave heaven? Jesus was, according to Psalm 110 verse 1, it says, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies your footstool. Well, that means Christ has to be continually at the right hand of the Father. So he couldn't leave heaven to come down to earth to, talk to John. He couldn't leave heaven to do that. In Peter's sermon in Acts chapter 3, he talks about Christ's ascension. He says, whom the heavens must receive until the time of the restoration of all things that God has spoken about by all the holy prophets since the world began. So heaven has received Christ into the presence of the Father until the time that the restoration of all things takes place. That is the kingdom. So Christ can't leave heaven. It's very clear from those passages that Christ is in heaven until these things happen. So Jesus didn't leave heaven to come down and talk to John while he was on the island of Patmos. Jesus didn't leave heaven when he spoke to Paul on the Damascus Road. He didn't leave heaven. How did Paul hear that? Because he was in the Spirit. He was in the breath. See, the holy breath of God can reach down and sort of scoop up, if you will, or completely surround a man like John on the island of Patmos, so that he is in communication with God in heaven, and it's as though John is there, even though he's still physically here. So it's not that John's ghost ascended up into heaven. It's not that John bodily ascended up into heaven. It's that heaven, through the holy breath of God, reached down and surrounded John right where he was, which then gave him the ability to see these things, to hear Jesus' words, and to talk directly with Christ himself while he's still seated at the Father's right hand. All right. And anyway, but we see this same kind of language about being in the breath and people being able to see what's going on in heaven. We see this not only in the New Testament, but also in the Old Testament. For example, in Ezekiel chapter 31, verse 1, we see, 37, verse 1, we see that Ezekiel was in the breath, and he was taken in the breath to a valley where he saw the dry bones, and he saw the vision of the valley of dry bones, which was a vision of the resurrection, right? And it's interpreted for him there. We see that in Matthew 22, verse 43, when David said in Psalm 110:1, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. In Matthew 22:43, Jesus refers to that passage, and he said that David was in the spirit or in the breath when he wrote, or when he said, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand. That is when he wrote Psalm 110, verse 1, or at least when he saw what he then wrote in Psalm 110, that he was in the breath when he did that. All right, Stephen was in the breath when he was being stoned, and he saw Jesus at the right hand of the Father. And he said, you know, Lord Jesus, receive my breath, as he was being stoned to death in Acts 7, 55 and 56. Paul was in the breath when it says he was in vision. He was caught up into paradise, and then he was caught up into the third heaven. It was in vision that he saw these things while he was in the breath. Again, these are not talking about out-of-body experiences. There's no such thing as an out-of-body experience, and people who are having out-of-body experiences that are not simply being in the breath of God are encountering something demonic. All right. Anyway, we also see later on in the book of Revelation that John is in the breath again when he's taken different places. For example, in Revelation 17:3, John is taken in the breath to view the destruction of Mystery Babylon, that is, the destruction of Rome when it's burned with fire by the 10 kings. And then again, it says he is in the breath when he's taken to view the New Jerusalem in Revelation chapter 21, verse 12. All right, so John is seeing these things while he still remains on the island of Patmos. That's the point that I'm trying to make here, okay? All right, I'm going to stop there. I'm out of time. Beginning next time, we're going to pick up Revelation chapter 4. We're going to go through probably all of chapter 4. And look at the scene as John then is shown only what Daniel saw in a glimpse of the Ancient of Days seated on his throne. All right. God bless you, and it's been a pleasure being with you.